There is nothing so wonderful in the world as telling stories.
Tous les matins, on essaye de traverser le miroir et de regarder le monde différemment.
It is true, I am a woman.
Une fois que ce saut est fait, tout devient possible.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Casaraghi. Welcome to the podcast of Les Rendez-vous littéraires Rue Cambon, a place where we meet to talk about writing, to talk about books. Let's meet women writers who have just taken their first step, the most decisive, the most difficult in the world of literature. How did their vocation call to them? What are their writing rituals? Who reads them and what do they read?
I'm Erica Wagner, and it's my pleasure to introduce Sheena Patel and welcome her to Chanel's podcast, Les Rencontres. After Sheena won the Discover Book of the Year at the 2023 British Book Awards, she was asked what victory changed for her. "People listen to what I have to say," was her answer, and quite right too. "I'm a Fan," her remarkable debut novel, is a thrilling, excoriating take on how our online lives have corrupted what we're still pleased to think of as our real lives. Its unnamed narrator is fixated on the man I want to be with, as she says, and the woman I am obsessed with. And this pair are sleeping with each other too. The man is a mover and shaker, the woman an influencer whose glossy life appears to be a beacon of perfection. Our narrator desires them both, you might say, her longing always moderated through her phone, through Instagram, through the algorithms capitalist culture serves us all. Sheena's narrator is a brown woman living within a society where whiteness dominates, and her position within that society is always called into question by others, by herself. Reading this novel is an intense and shocking experience as we all see our desires and our prejudices, I know I'm not alone, refracted through Sheena's penetrating lens. One of the Observer's best debut novels for 2022, I'm a Fan was longlisted for the Women's Prize. It was shortlisted for the Dylan Thomas Prize and the Jalak Prize, as well as being Foyle's Fiction Book of the Year in 2022. It was a finalist in the Art Seidenbaum Award for First Fiction category for the LA Times Book Prize, and it will be published in French by Gallimard in 2024. The Guardian's Lamorna Ashe called it corrosive and brilliant. Its subject matter makes it incredibly contemporary, the way in which it reveals its narrator's insecurities and her vivid perception of the world make it timeless. It's a book to devour at a gulp. Sheena works in the television and film industry as well, as an assistant director on films including Doctor Strange and The Limehouse Golem. She is part of the For Brown Girls Who Write Collective, a group that's played an important role in her career. Thank you for joining me, Sheena. I'm so looking forward to our talk.
So am I. Thank you for that. You've got exactly the right tenor voice that I like listening to in podcasts.
So we're going to start by talking about your vocation as a writer. I'd love to hear about your beginnings. I mentioned the collective you're part of. What role has this played in your development as a writer?
I mean, it's essential. And without it, I wouldn't have been writing. I started, because I'd always written as a child, but I think in my late 20s, I started to write again in my phone while I was on the train to my job. And then I was thinking about my friends and wondering whether they wrote too. And I was having separate chats with all of them. And they were like, yeah, put something in the laptop, but I never show anybody. And I was like, oh, that's so funny. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get everybody on a boat. I'm going to get you to read to me and to each other. And yeah, we just had like a boat warming on the Thames. It was sort of idyllic. And about 20 friends turned up. And out of the 20, three of the girls that are in the collective with me. And I was like, there's something here that we need to look after. And we started the collective sort of loosely just as a WhatsApp group, just to be like, you're writing, I'll listen to it. I'll be an audience for you. And that being witnessed in the writing process and being seen as taken seriously by each other, I think was really transformative. And it meant that as an individual, we might not have had much power, but as a four, we suddenly had an energy. We were like a planet together. So then we started booking little gigs from like our friends. It was very DIY. And I think that process of performing and creating our own work, like self-publishing our own books, was really important. And like meeting Nina from Rough Trade Books and her being like, okay, I'll publish you too. Like there's something here, whatever it is, we'll publish it, was, yeah, the permission was really amazing. I think, and the permission with the group and Nina, I think that giving yourself permission rather than waiting for publishing.
That's very important, yeah. Because writing can be so solitary. And writing also can not necessarily seem like a career path. And I know you grew up in London, your parents came to Britain from elsewhere. And I've heard you say, I'm quoting you, being a second generation immigrant, your parents have done the graft and you sit there saying, who am I? How do I express myself? And they're like, just get an effing job. Tell me a little bit more about how you came to find an effing job in which you could express yourself.
Well, this wasn't a job, quite frankly. The job was something else, and my parents wanted me to be like a doctor or a lawyer. But I'd always felt like I had something to say. And coming into TV, it's like being an actor, like being crew. You're just like, well, give me a job. Do you know I'm alive? Yeah, so the job was one thing, and this was always on the side. It was a hobby. But the group sort of officialized it, and suddenly I had this other thing going on. It was the collective more that meant that we had a bit of energy, even though that still was a hobby. But it gives it a seriousness, and my parents sort of never understood the art stuff, were very worried for a really long time about me, and are less worried now, so that's nice.
Who are the writers that you read to inspire you? I know you've mentioned, again, a few books that I think of that are so interesting. Women Who Run With the Wolves was one, Kathy Park Hong and her book Minor Feelings. And I'd also really like to ask you a book that's referenced in I'm a Fan, Martine Sims' book, Shame Space.
Yeah, Shame Space and Minor Feelings, they're both American writers, but I do quite look to American literature. Minor Feelings blew my mind. Kathy Acker also blows my mind. And I like, really tried to aspire to her searing sort of sentence, you know, how sexy and debauched it is. And Martine Sims, I love it when books sort of just find you. It's an art book. Martine Sims is this really interesting artist, and she does these really great films, essentially. And she's actually directed her first film, I think, a couple of years ago. It's called African Desperate, which is really interesting formulaically. But Shame Space, she published this book, essentially. It's an art book, and it's beautiful. It's like a book of Psalms. It looks like the Bible. And then inside of it, it's separated into four columns in over the two pages. And she is absolutely unapologetically appetite in her sentences. I was very liberated by that, by seeing how she expressed herself. So it was the confluence of those three things. And Minor Feelings was very radical to me because of how she questions and interrogates the narrative structure of second generation immigrants and like the participation of us in the system of commerce, essentially, and publishing and art making. And so everything that I thought I had been doing that was quite radical, I was like, oh my God, I've just read this book, it's blown my mind, and nothing that I've done is radical. So I think the three of them sort of colluded in my head and meant that this was sort of born out of the three of those voices. But also Maggie Nelson, another American author, Bluettes and Argonauts are, yeah, just love. I love how sad it is. Melancholy and full of longing. Like that's my favorite writing, is lonely writing.
You mentioned Rough Trade and Nina Hervé. How did the publication of I'm a Fan come about?
So the four brown girls who write the collective, we'd almost self-published this book with the femzine. I was DMing people, met Nina, and one day she was at a funeral around the corner when we did this very strange gig in Arsenal. She was like, oh, hi, I'm Nina. And she DM'd afterwards and she was like, whatever it is, we'll publish you and let's keep talking. So then in the pandemic, it came out. Well, like we did it before in 2019, but then it got delayed. And we put out a set of pamphlets, the four of us. And again, it was just sold on the internet. You know, it was like through our circles, like a couple of thousand got sold. And in the winter lockdown, it really, really took its toll on me, as it did all of us. But I was in a very bleak place. And she was just like, there's something in the pamphlet. I think you should write the book. And I was like, I don't know how to write a book. And she said, well, me and Will will help you. And so I wrote it in a year and 3 months or 2 months. And over that year, I was working full time. So I was just doing these two things. And because it was lockdown, there was nothing else going on. So on the weekends and in the evenings and whenever I could, like in the mornings. I mean, even now, I'm like, how did I do that? I don't know how I did it. I would write this. I mean, I wrote it so much that I was snowblind and I couldn't understand English anymore, which was such an interesting experience to like look at English symbols and just be like, this could be hieroglyphics. I just don't understand. And by chance, Nina got a really great publicist, Kate McQuaid, who is incredible and who I love. And Kate sort of brought more of the punctuation. And then The Guardian got in touch, The Observer got in touch, and they were like, we'd like to see this book. And I hadn't finished writing it. And actually what they read wasn't the finished thing. So it was all in, you know, all in the middle. So wow. It was very, very stressful. And then when they told us, yeah, I cried and laughed for about 3 days. I was just so ecstatic. And I was like, okay, this might be something. And then it's been a roller coaster for the last 2 years.
But it's wonderful to hear two stories of the way in which you were supported in your writing, first by the collective and then all along the way by your publisher. So at this point, let's hear a little bit of I'm a Fan.
Do I? I stalk a woman on the internet who is sleeping with the same man as I am. Sometimes when I'm too quick to look at her stories, I block her temporarily so she doesn't know I absentmindedly refresh her page 15 times a minute while Netflix plays in the background on my laptop, my stomach flipping sick with delight when her profile picture is ring red. She has tens of thousands of followers, is verified and is the daughter of someone famous in America. An endless stream of white people fawn in the comments under her posts. She has opinions about household objects which I've never given a thought to before, firm taste in the types of beeswax candles to burn, lays exquisite cloth on her table in anticipation of dinner, knows where to buy limited edition pottery from well-regarded potters. She will happily spend $300 on a vase where she displays really, really organic fennel flowers, by which she says there is organic, and then organic. Buys a $500 ring for herself during a time of financial strife for the rest of the world and shows it off in a selfie. She uses a filter on Instagram which burns up her flaws. It thins down her cheeks and radioactively erases the two thick lines shaped like spooning bees which are carved in her forehead and erupt from her face more prominently when she raises her eyebrows. A sick sense of satisfaction rips through me when I see them. She orders takeout from the right restaurants, seems to know everyone in the higher echelons of society, is accepted into the kinds of circles which seem out of reach to me. Sometimes I wonder, if I ever met her, what would I say to her? Would I tell her of our connection? Would I tell her I know where she lives? Would I tell her how I guessed that she broke up with her boyfriend? Would I tell her I know why the tone of her stories changed? Because the man we are both sleeping with, the man I want to be with, shamed her for exploiting her privacy the last time they saw one another. Would I tell her I know who her ex-husband is? I've seen his new family and he seems happy now, happier than the photos I've seen of the two of them. Would I tell her I know who all her friends are? I watch their stories too. Would I tell her I screenshot the photo she takes of herself and study her face so intently sometimes I fear I've picked up some facial expressions or tonal inflections from her because I listen to her speaking with her father on YouTube over and over before I go to sleep? Would I move in closer to smell her and feel what he felt when he felt her? Would I taste the inside of your mouth to find out what was so compelling? Would I press into you? I want to know exactly how your body moves when you are turned on, to know for myself why he cancelled fucking me. To fuck you.
Thank you so much, Sheena. Now I want to talk to you about why do your characters not have names?
The thing is, I wouldn't even think of myself as a writer because it just happened by accident. Sometimes I just sit at my laptop and something happens, and most often it doesn't. But it just came out that way. And I've realised now that actually there's some decisions that I'm quite happy to relinquish. It's the way it came out, so it was what I went with.
What do you think about it now? Have you reflected on that?
Well, someone told me something really clever. It was like how the internet is the most unreliable narrator. And I was like, oh my God, that's so smart. I'm stealing. And I think I'm quite obsessed with Jungian psychology. And so this idea of like archetypes and what are our modern archetypes? So I guess in that way, the girl is, the narrator is us, the observers, and then the influencer, which is a modern archetype. And then, you know, a white man with power is another archetype. And how those interplay. So I was quite interested. I'm reflecting back, maybe that's what I was doing, but I wasn't conscious of it at the time.
Is there an aspect of it that was particularly challenging for you to write?
I'd say the chapter, There's No Business, that section was really hard and was also the section I was most afraid of being published.
And the narrator, she feels persecuted, yet she never comes across as a victim. Was that a kind of tightrope you were aware
yes.
of walking?
Yeah, there was two rules I had, which is that I wanted the reader to be afraid, like because I read Kathy Acker's Blood and Guts, and I was just such a terrifying reading experience. I was like, I really want to replicate that. Books are a place of safety for me, but I really didn't want that to happen. And I was like, I know people are either going to love this or hate it. And it's turned out to be true. It's very Marmite, which is fine. And the other rule I had was that whatever was done to her, she had to do to somebody else. So that I kept the truth moving. And it was just that kind of moving through it that way and keeping it unstable was very purposeful.
You described a very particular routine of writing when you were writing this book in lockdown, and that was a very particular time. Do you have a routine now? How do you set about your work these days?
I am writing almost every day. At the moment, I'm doing it because someone's asked me to write something, so that's how I'm doing it. But I can see already in the last year how much stronger I've got. So I wrote an introduction for this really great book called A Spring of Love by Celia Dale. I mean, it's crime, but and I've never read crime, but she's incredible. She published when she was like in the 1940s or something. And I wrote it and I sent it to Will and then he was like, yeah, this is pretty good. So yeah, I felt like, oh, I've got better. I mean, I did this not really knowing how to write a book and not really caring about the rules of it. So there's no practice as such. But I'm very up for being bad at something and learning through doing it. I'm most comfortable when I'm learning, I think. And not knowing how something's been done before, but just sort of going for it. That's how I feel most comfortable. I hate change, but I always know it's necessary. And I always feel like whenever you're uncomfortable or scared, or those emotions need to be moved towards, because that's actually where the juice is. Like that's where the thing is. So yeah, I like that.
How was the editing process for this book, if you were learning in that way?
It was very intense. I think now if I was to write, I'd have so much more wherewithal to deal with the pressure of it. But yeah, the voice was something that happened. Like it was a deepening of that voice. It wasn't there immediately, but I was thinking like this would be more interesting if it was extremely strange, and threading through the strangeness was really important towards the end. It was like being in her head and thinking, how's a bathroom, a coffin and a table, the reception to hell. It was like, how can I make these images just really wild? But the editing process was as long as the writing process, even though the whole thing was quite quick. But it was hard. It was really hard. But good, but hard. But I also got edited as if the whole thing was a poem. I'd fight for every word.
So with real attention to
detail. Real attention to detail, yeah. I learned how much of editing, how much of writing is actually, you just fuffle a lot. And actually the good stuff sometimes in the middle. And then the rigorousness of that, of like writing and writing and writing and being okay with being with that. A never-ending process, because it's paid off. I'm proud of the sentence. Even now, you know, it's 3 years since I've written it. Like, there's some points I'm like, I could have made that sentence a bit better, but I'm proud of it, from not knowing anything to doing that. I've been so lucky with the whole thing, with the whole experience of the feeling of it. when I was 21, all I wanted to do was something that impacted the culture in some way. And I hope I've done this with this book. I've done something that people not only know but have read. Yeah, and that effect of feeling terrified or being confrontational or changing the way somebody sees something, I think is really magic. That's the thing. I mean, all the reviews have been amazing. All of that stuff is great, but I think this sort of, this more invisible but really incredible to have the sense of having a voice and also just creatively having achieved something. I don't know how much in your life you get to say that, that you've done something worthy of yourself and that could enter the canon in some way, if anybody wants to enter me into the canon. But but like it could be up for that, yeah. You know? It's yeah. Like one of those books that is very now. I wanted it to feel like now. I wanted to mix mass and literary culture. Like there's a lot of mixing of the internet and poetry, and it just feels like that's the thing I'm most proud of, I suppose.
Do you see this book as fiction?
If I was in my ideal world, it'd have no category. It could be in nonfiction if you wanted it to be, because of the way it kind of dips into the takedowns. But I was just very interested in mixing stuff. I was like, how can I mix like made up things with facts, with reviews, with all of this stuff? I mean, with memes, you know, with the internet, how can I, in a literary sense, capture the internet within a book and show how it's affected us? That's all I wanted to do. I have very like small objectives, which I mean, capture now, I mean, that's a huge objective, but it was a small question. I was like, how do I bottle the now and not attempt to be timeless? And I wasn't interested in being timeless. I just wanted to know who we are now.
We're now going to have a few questions that we ask all of our guests as we come to the end of the podcast. So the first one is, what is the most surprising thing you've learned from being a writer?
The funny thing about being a writer is how you're supposed to know how to take a photograph. That's what I didn't know about being a writer.
What would people be surprised to learn about you?
That I am a bit shy. What would we be surprised? I don't know. I'm a pretty open book, though, to be fair. I don't know. I'll tell you when I'm shy. That's how shy I am. No surprises.
What is your idea of perfect happiness?
I don't know, but when I meet her, I'll tell you.
What advice would you give to anyone who wants to express their creativity?
Loads of advice. Start writing or doing whatever it is. Be bad at it. Bear being bad at it. Don't judge it. Make with your friends. Force your friends to make things with you. You have to finish things. And you have to show people. Otherwise, what are you doing it for?
How would you like to be remembered as a writer?
A groundbreaking genius.
And final question. What would you like your second novel to look like? Do you have a vision for it?
I would just like it to be different and good. Whatever I did, whatever this was, I'd be scared of disappointing myself, I think. This was like perfect, absolute perfect experience. So, I don't know, brain. Come for another one.
Thank you so much, Sheena Patel, for joining us on Les Rencontres podcast. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rendez-vous Littéraire Rue Cambon podcast. To discover more about it, you will find images, links, and references on the Chanel website. À bientôt!